I was recently in a conversation with a non-churchy friend about the uncertain and even perilous days that we live in. These are challenging times, and that's perhaps not as noticeable locally here in sleepy little Qualicum Beach. But I think it certainly looks that way globally. We live in an age of rapid cultural shifts. We live in a time of denominational decline and decreasing disconnection with the Christian church, at least here in the West. There's ethnic suspicion and hostility, religious conflict, climate worries, terrorism fears, assorted wars, uncertainty about how to pay for a future that we assumed would be there for all of us, range of medical ethical concerns, and if you will permit me, a deliberately rare foray into the partisan politics from the pulpit world. A presidential race to the South that, according to most polls, seems to give a choice between candidates that nobody much likes. As I said to my friend, admittedly tongue somewhere in my cheek, you don't have to be a preacher to know we're going to hell. The end is near. And as I hoped, he laughed. I also noticed that he didn't actually disagree. And yeah, I was playing the prophet of doom. I was attempting to be a modern-day Jeremiah. The book of the Old Testament by the name of Jeremiah is a challenging read. Good portions of the book are conversations between God and the prophet Jeremiah. And it's not actually always clear who's speaking at first gloss. It's a book you need to study with some care. Jeremiah's prophecies cover some four decades, and there were five different kings of Judea over those decades, and that means that knowing the exact context of each situation being addressed is a bit tricky. While some of the prophetic words are words of hope, most of what we read are judgments against Israel. There are some prophecies against other nations too, and to further give us pause, things are not presented in chronological order. So to read Jeremiah requires a bit of diligence. That all being said, Jeremiah, you sometimes hear him referred to as the weeping prophet. Jeremiah is an important read. And so before I press on with today's particular text, let me just expand a bit about the background. The prophet Jeremiah was born just a few miles outside of Jerusalem, born to a priestly family. More than 600 years before the birth of Jesus. And he was born into a very difficult time. As far as the people of Israel were concerned, the world was going to hell. You'll remember that against divine advice, Israel had chosen to live under a rule of a monarchy. And while they had had some good kings, they'd had no shortage of bad kings. People had drifted into idolatry. There had been some worshipping of the god Baal. That's a particularly odious religious belief. There had been some priestly corruption. And the poor, they just kept getting forgotten in all this. God had given them warnings, but with some exceptions, the prophets had been largely ignored. You'll also remember that Israel had been living under the thumb of Assyria, and that nation had absorbed the northern tribes of Israel, which left intact just the southern kingdom of Judea. But now Assyria was in decline, and the southern kingdom now found itself threatened by Babylon to the east and Egypt to the west, and they were both powerful nations. Babylon had its eye on the Judean coast because that would give it access to the Mediterranean, so that was it made them very interested in taking Judea. And in response to that, a number of the Judean kings had tried to lessen that threat by playing up to Egypt, and that turned out to be a calamitous policy. God spoke to Jeremiah, and the message for the nation was that they weren't going to avoid this cataclysm no matter what they did, that they would indeed fall to Babylon. But then, of course, a lot of people didn't believe the prophet, They kept believing that somehow they were not going to be absorbed into the Babylonian Empire. And why did they think that? Well, they were absolutely sure that they had God on their side. After all, they had the Davidic covenant. You remember that was the promise delivered by Nathan to David, that the Messiah would come out of David's lineage, and a kingdom would be established that would go on forever. And of course, there was the presence of the temple. And they believed that the temple in Jerusalem was a place where God lived. And so they thought that these things would be like a get-out-of-jail-free card. So Jeremiah's message was pretty much, give in to Babylon and it'll be easier for us in the long run. That message wasn't exactly embraced. In fact, it was largely rejected. In the end, of course, Judea was crushed. And the temple was destroyed. And great portions of the population, the leadership, and the best and the brightest of the population, they were taken away to serve in Babylon. And so to Israel, it was as if the world had come to an end. And the exiles by the rivers of Babylon, they wept. Our specific text today describes a somewhat curious scene. Jeremiah is instructed by God to head down to the local potter's place of work, and as you'd expect, he gets to see the potter working on his wheel. And the piece that the potter's working on doesn't quite work the way he'd originally planned, so using the same piece of clay, he has another go at turning it into what he wanted it to be in the first place. And then God reveals to Jeremiah that this is the way that God is approaching Israel. God's desire for Israel hadn't come to fruition. You know, perhaps the quality of the clay wasn't quite as hoped. And so God was going to begin again. Goal was the same, but they were going to start again. Things were going to look a little different. Our vacation last month began with Tevis and I flying to Provence in the south of France. So it was Nanaimo to Vancouver, Vancouver to London, London to Brussels, Brussels to Marseille. Yes. We got off the plane in Marseille, minus my baggage, which was still in Brussels. Let's save that one for another sermon. We got off the plane in Marseille at 11 o'clock at night, and by the time we got our rental car, it was midnight. We were trying to get to our accommodation, which was in the city of Aubagne, which is only 20 kilometers to the east of Marseille, a distance that our car's GPS indicated would take us a mere 22 minutes. What could possibly go wrong? Well, as it turns out, a number of things. For a start, the voice of the GPS wasn't functioning. So we were trying to pay attention to this small screen and pay attention to our surroundings, which, remember, are in the dark, all at the same time. To compound matters, that's not so easy when you're tired, and we've been up for 24 hours. And what we also hadn't known was that the road crews of Provence believe that the very best time to begin work on the main route to Aubagne is midnight. So carefully following the GPS, we were soon being instructed to take roads that were suddenly behind construction barriers, and that forced us to take unexpected right and left turns. Course alterations, which the GPS at first found to be tolerable, but was soon letting us know in nonverbal ways, it was letting us know that this was a bit annoying. And so the on-screen instructions were now giving us only one option, and that was turning around and somehow forcing our way through the orange cones and fences to travel on highways that were not actually passable. Tevis and I soon found ourselves on, well, what was the seamy side of Marseille. And trust me, friends, Marseille knows how to do seamy. And our planned route was falling apart. And we were also trying to figure out how to lock and bar the car doors. For some reason, the car door's locks were not functioning. And security had now become a conversation between the passenger seat and the driver's seat. And then we noticed that we were going in circles, and our expected time of arrival in Obanya, that little number lurking in the bottom right of my GPS, it kept getting more and more remote. It seemed to be turning from minutes to hours to days, you know? And to make matters even worse, it's late. And you know how problems at night always seem worse? Eventually we were so lost and so far off course that we just pulled over. We re-entered the destination, offered frustrated words about the GPS and one another, I confess. And we proceeded in a general east direction and hoping to find our lodging somehow. GPS did a whole bunch more recalculating, and a mere hour and a half later, after our expected time of arrival, we rolled into our destination. Yes, it took us 2 hours to go 22 kilometers. Emotionally battered, physically tired, we went to bed. The next day, we arose to find ourselves standing not quite in paradise, but something not too far off. Provence is brilliant. And our time there was really beyond anything we'd hoped. But the whole getting there thing was something of a lesson to me. The journey had not gone as we'd planned. There were disruptions all along the ride. Our course, if we were to plot it out on a map, looked like nothing like the one we'd intended. Certainly not the one we'd started out on. The route to our destination was constantly needing to be revised, and it was stressful, and there were times when we wondered if we'd ever get there. But somehow, our guidance system worked. Eventually, it saw us through. Watching a potter do her thing is really quite cool. And if you've never had the chance to watch someone create something on a potter's wheel, I'm going to link a video clip of someone making a pot to the sermon when I post it online on the website this afternoon. It really is neat to see. Potters are careful with the clay, but they're also quite forceful at the same time, literally throwing the clay onto the wheel and then deliberately pushing and prodding and pulling it into a shape that they have in mind as it spins around. And our text today seems to suggest that God actually does this with God's people. That there's some notion in the potter's mind as to what the completed project will look like. It's not a random thing. And in some ways, God's active in pushing and prodding and pulling us into this dreamed of creation. Well, we talked about this active interventionist God in week 2 of our belief series on Christian doctrine way back at the beginning of January. God's involved, God's leading this project. We are being taken somewhere. There's a divine plan for this new creation. In fact, Jesus' great teaching, the very good news he preached, that gospel focused on the message that there's a new kingdom already breaking in. That's the plan. And note that the word that we use to describe this intervention in our faith is not fate. Fate implies some inevitable end, seems to deny our freedom of will, our freedom to make decisions. No, we speak about providence, which is a reference to how God is involved and acts in this world. In some parts of the church, you'll hear this referred to that, you know, God has a plan for your life, right? It's actually a rather cool notion. I like it because it reminds me that I'm not quite, you know, in this alone. I'm not just making up my life as I go on. It's not all random, but somehow God's involved. I'm encouraged by the idea that there might be more purpose and meaning to my life than, say, having fun or dying wealthy, and there's little chance of that, or having a successful career, or simply reproducing myself. No, God's leading me somewhere. And that connects me to something greater. So I can see and understand myself in some way as a contributor to God's project. That God's employing my peculiar gifts and probably even my weaknesses to move the divine plan towards its fulfillment. So I'm not the driver, but I'm not simply the passenger either. Or to use another metaphor, you and I, we've each been graciously offered a role to fulfill in the great drama that God is writing. The arc of the story, God's already determined. Yeah. You know, read Revelation if you want to peek at that glorious conclusion, which is actually really a beginning of something else. But your lines and my lines in that drama, they're ours to form, they're ours to speak. And God nudges us into speaking them. Sometimes with some vigor, like a potter throwing a fresh clay onto the wheel. And at other times, it's gently drawing us, molding us through a whisper or through an opportunity. And you can ignore it, of course. You can wander away from the direction that God's calling us. I know I do that with some frequency. Sometimes it's even deliberate. For some reason, I want to reassert my independence in ways that aren't always especially very good. I want, can you do that forever? Can we reject the potter's role in our lives in perpetuity? I don't know. I think that's likely a message for another day. But I do know that amongst the character qualities that the potter has, well, one of them is certainly persistence. The promises made or promises kept. And this potter is driven by an amazing love. Of course, there are other times when it's not that I'm rejecting the direction offered. It's just I've got the cues all wrong. The direction I thought led to abundant life wasn't actually the right one. I suppose that's in part why we go to church, why we're in the community of faith together, why we make a habit of coming together with regularity, and even when we don't feel like coming to church, to discern where we're being led both individually and together. It takes some work, some deliberation, some conversation, some time, some silence for that molding process to occur, to see the pattern, the design imagined by the potter emerge. And where we're being led tomorrow or next week or next year, well, it's good to have a route in mind. In fact, I think it's prudent to set a course. But we do so with the awareness that it's a bit like a budget, you know? It's a plan and not a guarantee of an outcome. It doesn't guarantee what the future brings. Adjustments are inevitable. So no, we face tomorrow with confidence in a God whose ways are not our ways, who has promised us a glorious future, but not a great deal of detail as to what this route is going to be like. There will be some surprises along the way, perhaps better understood as we look back. Look back at the work of a potter who pushes and prods and pulls us and pulls our world into what is becoming the very kingdom of God. Thanks be to God. Amen.